Good morning. Oh, you are cheery, aren't you? I've come all the way from Luton, or Luton, as we like to call it up there, but it is genuinely really delightful to be here and to be part of the service this morning. As you heard, my name is Chris. I'm a youth worker. I've been a youth worker most of my life. I realise that is sort of a stretch, given that I look like a sort of leftover part of an old M&S menswear catalogue on most days. But yes, I work with young people. And I've been to St. Andrew's before. Oh, you didn't know that, did you? I sneaked in to meet Steve and Laura, and they fed me with a glorious lunch. We had the finest sandwiches that could be bought from M&S down the road. And I got to meet and see a little bit of the church there. So I want to talk a little bit about young people. I want to talk a little bit about how important it is for young people to be in the life of the church, to be part of the church. And I suppose the first thing I want to say is young people bring so much to the church. They're amazing. And often we think, when we think about youth work, we think about what we're doing for young people. We forget how much young people do for us as the church. I'm going to get you to do something to help me with that. So I wanted to show you very quickly some pieces of art created by teenagers that describe faith and life in different ways. I want you to have a look, and I've got a job for you in this. Here's the first one. I'll introduce them to you one by one. I want you to have a look, and I want you to decide which one sort of resonates with you. Which one do you like the most, whether you like the art or the comment behind it, or whatever it might be. Okay, so here's the first one. This is Millie, and this is a piece of art she has created. She's 15, and you can see Millie's created herself in black and white, but then there's a sort of burst of color. There's a theologically challenging unicorn, and there is Millie again in glorious color. And this is what she says about herself. She says, "The black and white is the me people see. I'm very ordinary. A bit sporty, okay at school. I blend in with everyone else. But I have a spiritual side to me that no one notices, where I come alive. My spiritual side is in color because it represents how I connect with the world and whatever else is out there." Wow. I am impressed with Millie. She's amazing. What an interesting thought. I can resonate with that. Felt like me a little bit as a teenager. Right, can we try the next one? Here is Nikki, and she's 14. And Nikki has borrowed a sheet from home, and unfortunately it will not be returned because she's torn a hole in it. And she's mounted it on some cardboard and painted the cardboard behind gold. I don't know whether you can see that. And then she's covered the sheet with red and black paint and cutouts from an old newspaper. And her picture is called "Where is God?" And this is what Nikki says, age 14. She says, "I've got newspaper clippings from today's news with barbed wire. My way of symbolizing war and suffering for the world. In the top left, there's a big tear in the fabric. Underneath is bright gold. This is where I think God is, forever growing larger in the world and in our hearts, biding his time to cover the whole image in gold." Wow. I mean, Nikki has, I think, got an insight into the kingdom of God that some of us who've been sitting in the church for decades might have missed. What an amazing vision, biding his time to cover the whole image in gold. Let's try another one. This is Mia. She's 13. And what Mia has done is she's broken up a mirror and mounted it on this bit of wood and then photographed herself looking in the mirror. And her piece of work is called "God, He Lies in You." She says, "I believe every one of us possesses him. I've titled my design, 'God, He Lies in You.' I've included a mirror When anyone looks at this artwork symbolizing God, they see their own face. The image will be broken because it's hard to see that God is in each of us. It's very personal. I'm not sure everyone agrees with my opinions. This design has deep meanings, she's telling you. Everything from the color to the shapes used symbolizes something. I will not explain what I intend everything to mean. Work it out for yourself. Brilliant. I like Mia already. God, that's good, isn't it? It's not bad, is it, for 13? Wow, what an insight into who God is. Can I show you one more? This is Ahmad, and he has drawn the three men going into the fire and Jesus appearing. And this is what Ahmad says. He says, where is God? In the fire. You don't know you will find him there. You don't want to be there. But sometimes the only way to find out if God is real is to go into the fire. When it gets hot, you'll find a presence with you that is beyond belief. Wow. Okay. Let's just have the final slide. So I've shown you four. I said there was a job. You've got to work for this. So here's what I want you to do. I want you to just turn to someone near you. Smile politely. You've already greeted them with the peace, so you're friends. And tell them, which one do you like the most and why? What resonates with you? Just take a second to do that. Which one do you like? It might be because of the art, it might be because of the words, but which one leaps out to you? Is it Millie, Nikki, Mia, or Ahmad? I'm just going to give you a moment to do that. We really miss young people in the church. It's not what we do for them, though we hopefully do much. But actually, the church without young people is infinitely poorer. I miss it when we don't have. I'm not just thinking of children. I'm thinking of teenagers here who come. They often challenge us, don't they? It's not just their enthusiasm. They ask the questions that sometimes we're afraid to ask. They point out the things that sometimes we don't want to notice. And I love that about children and young people. And yet the truth is, the church is emptier of young people than it has been in decades. And that's painful. 9 out of 10 churches in the Church of England don't have a youth group. Only 1 in 10 do. Half of the young people growing up in the church, and there aren't many of them, disappear whilst they're teenagers. There's something about church that doesn't work for them. And so this morning, I just want to talk very briefly through this passage in Mark 6 about what might be the call of Jesus in response to that. And I hope offer you some hope too, now that you're looking at me slightly depressed. I promise I'm going to cheer you up. So let's just look at these words in Mark 6 and this story. And you know this story, I realize, this story of the feeding of the 5,000. But it starts in a little bit of pressure and chaos. Remember, just prior to this, John the Baptist has been beheaded. The disciples are perhaps wondering if they'll be next. But they're with Jesus, and he's by Galilee, this amazing huge lake, some 8 miles long, 2 miles wide. And wherever Jesus is, the crowds are coming, and they want to listen, and they want to learn. And it says, it's chaos. The disciples are so busy that they don't even have time to eat. And so there's people coming for healing, to listen. There are crowds everywhere. And finally, in this story, Jesus turns to his disciples and he says those amazing words. I don't know whether you caught that. Come away with me by yourselves to a quiet place and get some rest. Oh my God. Goodness, I would have been relieved at that point if I was a disciple. Finally, we're going to get a few moments away from this crowd. Remember, there's everyone around them, hundreds, thousands of people. Come away with me, he says, by yourselves to a quiet place and get some rest. And they jump into a nearby boat that they borrow, and they begin to head out across Galilee, as I say, about 8 miles long, 6 or 8 miles long, about 2 miles wide. And what a relief. Can you imagine what it might have been to be one of those disciples? And remember, the disciples themselves, we think, are only teenagers, although they wouldn't have used those term there. They might have been just 18 or 19 years old. And they head out in the boat with Jesus, and finally they're getting a chance to get away from it. And I just sort of, I don't know if you've ever thought about this, I sort of imagine what that's like as you come out from the shore with all the crowd, all the people. And gradually as you come out into Galilee, the noise of the crowd on the shore subsides and just becomes quieter and quieter and less. And gradually you can hear the lap of the water against the side of the boat and the, oh my goodness, the relief of just having that moment of peace. And then I don't know which disciple it was who noticed, but that crowd that they were watching, they look again, and the problem is the crowd isn't there, it's there. And then it's there. And then it's there. Because it turns out that as they are crossing the lake, the crowd don't want to stop listening to Jesus, and they are tearing round the outside. So the disciples think they're getting away from it, but when they finally get to the other side, what do they find? They find the very same people that they just left. A little more exhausted at this point. The fastest and the fittest first, but they're all there waiting to hear more. Oh my goodness, at that point, if I was a follower of Jesus, if I was a disciple, I would have been absolutely grumpy. But verse 34, Jesus has compassion on them. Did you notice that? It says, as they land, despite the fact that they've tried to get away for a bit of peace and quiet, Jesus sees this crowd coming to learn and to listen and wanting more. And it says he has compassion on them because they were like sheep without a shepherd. This is where all ministry starts. Not with a strategy or a plan, or even with a noticed need, but with compassion. And when I think about how churches can step into working more with young people, that's exactly how it starts. Not with a big strategy or a plan, but with compassion. Stopping and noticing the needs of young people. Think of one girl who I met in Luton, Rachel, growing up in a loving family but struggling from the age of 9 or 10 with her mental health, ending up at 14 harming herself. And suddenly it all came to light. It had been happening for over a year, and I was sitting with the parents and with her and just absolute panic at what was going on. And Rachel's saying, this is just the only way I know how to cope with how I'm feeling about myself inside. 1 in 10 young people will harm as a teenager. And I think about Clifford, this amazing young man I met who was an absolute nightmare at school. If you're a teacher and you had Clifford in your class, you were not happy. He was an absolute nightmare. And I ended up meeting his mum at home, and in Luton, it was a little two up, two down terraced house. And I sat and I heard her story and I heard Clifford's story. His dad had left home, started a new family with a girlfriend about a mile down the road. They had a baby. And he said he didn't want anything more to do with Clifford, who was 13. And I remember sitting with this lad, and he said, I'm scared to go into the town centre because I might meet my dad, and then I don't know what will happen. So every time he went out, he was nervous, 13 years old. And I think of Tamara, growing up in the church, amazing young woman, 15 years old, in a church with almost no young people. She was just, there were just a handful. of church families, and she'd faithfully grown up in the church. She'd been to Sunday school, but there was nothing for young people, so she started helping out with the Sunday school because that's what the only thing there was to do. And describing, I remember listening to her to describe how hard it is to be a Christian as a teenager in the school she was in, where she felt like she was literally the only person who was a Christian. And she said to me, my family are great, but I just wish there were some others. I wish I could get some more support to stay a Christian as a teenager. Our work with young people starts in compassion. And that's my first challenge for us this morning. Have we stopped to see the needs of young people in the life of the church and in the life of the community? Well, the story goes on, and of course you know, we're not going to go into it in detail, but Jesus begins to teach and it gets late and stomachs begin to rumble. And finally, the disciples come to Jesus and say, we've got to do something about this. Send people away or do something. We need food. And here comes the second moment that I want you to notice. What does Jesus say? There's real need. Jesus, in response, verse 37 says, you give them something to eat. And the disciples look at Jesus as though he's gone absolutely mad. What do you mean, you give them something to eat? Us? We've got nothing. I mean, they have a look. They've got 5 squashed bits of bread. And if you've ever had a sandwich, I presume it was someone who brought one sandwich in the back of the pocket, slightly compressed from leaning on it, 2 slightly smelly fish. They've got nothing. They say, we can't feed them. We've got nothing. And Jesus stops and he still says, no, you give them something to eat. This is the place I think many churches find themselves in. They see the need in young people, but they say, Lord, we've got nothing. We don't have enough volunteers. We don't have the right place to do it. We don't know what we're doing. We can't do it. Lord, you'll have to do something. And Jesus says, no, you give them something to eat. But Lord, you don't understand. We've got nothing. You give them something to eat. Jesus doesn't ask them, though, to give out of their simply out of what they've got. He is going to be at work. So his challenge is start with what you've got and let me do something with it. And that's what happens in the story. I'm sure you know this well. Because they ask people to sit down and they hand out the food that they've got. These 5 loaves and 2 fish. And I mean, it says there are thousands of people there that day. So this is ridiculous. And by the way, notice, Jesus doesn't multiply the food before it's handed out. So they can go, oh, that's fine, we'll distribute it. It's only when they begin the work that the miracle happens. I've got personal experience of this because just a couple of Sundays ago, I was invited for Sunday lunch and with this family, full Sunday lunch. And I don't know if you've ever been to a lunch like this where you're sitting around the dining table and the vegetables were in these sort of pots with tops on to keep them warm. And when you're ready to start, the host sort of pulls off the top to dramatically reveal the Brussels sprouts. Have you ever been at a meal like that? It's like, wow. This was a problem, though, because they pulled off the tops and we all looked down and we could see the crisis that was about to happen because they had underrepresented the number of peas required. There were not enough peas. And you look down, you just think, oh my goodness, they have not cooked enough peas to go around. And obviously, we're very British, so we try not to say anything about this out loud, but we're all thinking it. Now, I've got a tactic in these situations that I use to deal with it because you've got to be very careful and very clever in these situations. And I've learned what the thing to do is you don't go first. Because if you go first, you're very conscious that there aren't enough peas. So you take even fewer than normal. I mean, literally 3 or 4. Because you know there aren't enough to go around. So you undercompensate. You put a few, you go all the way around. If you go last, there are still loads of peas left. You just simply pile them on the plates. I can see you're not impressed by my tactics. That's why I'm never invited back to the same place twice. But this is what's happening at this moment. As Jesus passes a break, breaks the bread, blesses it, and as the disciples pass it out, the bread multiplies, the fish multiplies, and a miracle takes place. You give them something to eat. Jesus asks them to start with what they've got and then to go from there. I've just been working with a church in St. Albans, a little church where exactly perhaps what I've been describing, where it feels like there's nothing to start with. And the vicar there, Kate, said, I don't know how we can start with young people. We've got literally two or three teenagers. Two of them are my own. How are we going to start? We don't have anyone to volunteer to help us, but we're going to start. And so she decided to start a small group and was expecting four or five young people to come one evening. Well, the first miracle was, having decided she was going to do it, out from the congregation stepped someone she hadn't expected. She said, if you're doing it, Vicar, and you need some help, I'll help. So suddenly there was help. And then what she described in the email to me the following day was a mini revival, because seven turned up. Seven young people. And she started something. So here's the challenge. Here's the challenge for every church right now, and perhaps the challenge for St. Andrew's. What have you got? You've got the amazing work of Laura. You've got the children's work. But how can you grow it? How can you take what you've got and grow it and support more and more, not just children, but young people? Lord, it's impossible. No, you give them something to eat. You step out. All it requires is for us to be faithful to what God is asking of us. And in that moment, the small steps we take lead us to support amazing young people like Rachel, struggling with her mental health. Young men like Clifford, trying to figure out who he is in a broken family. Tamara, trying to hold her faith as a 15-year-old in her school and wanting support. May God give us the eyes to see and have compassion and the willingness to step out, even with the little we have, to see what God will do with it. Amen.